The Real Estate Revolution is provided for general information only and should not be treated as a substitute for professional advice. Please consult your trusted financial advisor, real estate professional, or attorney before making any real estate or financial decisions. Please remember, when following advice, your results may vary, and all information covered here is not intended to cover all aspects of the subject material, but rather a sample of issues the hosts and guests consider important.
It's the Real Estate Revolution,
with the latest revolution.
You
get fun and the facts, you will keep coming back.
It's time to live the life you choose.
And now it's time for a power hour from America's trusted resource for everything real estate. Everything in the real estate industry is in a constant movement of change. It's a Real Estate Revolution with your host, Victoria Riva De Nera. The Riva regulars, special guests, and your call-in comments. Welcome to the Real Estate Revolution.
Revolution, revolution, revolution.
Good evening and welcome to the Real Estate Revolution on New York's AM 1700 WRCR. You can find us on WRCR.com as well. We are live video streaming on Periscope.tv/Tim Judge. We're also live streaming on Facebook/Victoria Riva and HomeSearchTV.com/Revolution. I'm Victoria Riva De Nera, and I'm here with Scott Forcino and Phil Ferranda. How are you guys tonight?
Should you answer or should I first?
Well, how many vowels can we get in these names?
Okay. I'm fine, Victoria. How are you? You look well.
Did you say you're fun?
I'm fine.
Oh, I thought you said you were fun.
Well, I'm a fun guy, if you ask some people, but I'm doing just swell.
All right. Phil's, and Scott?
Phil's a mushroom, a fun guy.
A fun guy.
We're great.
All right. Well, I'm glad to hear that you're great. So we're here every Wednesday to bring a real estate revolution of positive change for the greater good of our industry and the consumers. And for the last 2 weeks, we've been talking about the good, the bad, and the ugly of social media, and mainly how to stay safe when using social media. But this week, we're going to switch it up a little bit, and we're just going to talk about a variety of different subjects. Is that okay with you guys?
Sure, freestyle.
All right. So I just want to begin with some things that are going on in the market. You know, right now we're in the throes of the spring market, and on a national level, contract signings are up. They're up actually by 1.4% in March, as per the New York, National Association of Realtors. The mortgage rates are still very low, which is a good thing because prices across the country are rising. So, you know, you want to have those rates stay low, and it's surprising that they've stayed so low for so long.
It's the artificial manipulation of the real estate market by the money powers, but that's just my own real estate, my own conspiracy theory.
I would go with that.
Yeah.
It's not irrational exuberance like it once was.
It's caution. They are afraid that if they raise the rates, that the consumers will leave the marketplace. They don't realize that that's not the biggest economic indicator.
If they raise the rates, it would cause a sense of urgency, I think, too.
Yeah, what it would do, I would probably cause a mini rush.
Mm-hmm. Which would not be a bad thing.
I wouldn't object to it. However, you got to be careful about doing things policy-wise that poach from future transactions. Right now, we've got a good organic amount of transactions going on, and values aren't shooting up, but you know, that's okay.
Well, prices are up nationwide by about 38% within the last 3 years. We're not seeing that so much here in the Northeast. They're up a little bit, but not as much as 38%. But we tend to lag behind the West.
I also think that a lot of that rise is recapturing a lot of lost value from the Great Recession, where there were 70 and 60 and 50% hits to value. So I think that's part of a corrections can be good as well.
Yes. Yes. And the West Coast did take quite a hit.
Those are the odd states. Yeah, California, Nevada, Arizona.
That's correct. I mean, Florida did too, but they're out here on the East Coast.
It's like Crips and Bloods, East and West.
Yes.
You have to know that. But I don't know which is which.
I was just going
to
ask you that.
I
know one is blue
sure.
And one is red.
I don't know that. But I once was at a batting cage in L.A., and they said no gang colors. And I had like some fuchsia Izod shirts. I didn't even know what that was.
I doubt that there's a gang that's wearing fuchsia.
Or Izod.
They're the kind of gang. They're the kind of gang that would be a lot of fun.
Right.
Oh, and you're a fun guy.
I
so.
Am. Yeah.
Very good. Very good. So let's talk a little bit about pending sales. Pending sales are up. Pretty much everywhere. The only place that pending sales are on a decrease is out in the West Coast. But prices are up in the West Coast. So what do you think about that, Phil?
I think it's supply and demand. I think because they had such an overheated market that prices skyrocketed, and there's a natural cyclical nature to the market where there's, again, a correction where people see unsustainable prices and they sit on their hands until things cool off a bit.
I would agree with that. Scott, are you in agreement?
Yeah, I'm going to concur.
Come with us, okay?
I'm
you're like daydreaming, looking the other way.
I am waiting to get my teeth into
something. Oh, I know what you're doing. You're smiling at the camera.
No, I'm not even on this.
You're not on this one, but you're on the other one.
No one's on this. I had like 100 people last time, and now there's...
You're no longer a fun guy.
Yeah, I'm not a fun guy.
Okay, I don't even... Yeah.
Wow.
I'm not playing to the camera.
No? Okay. So both of you are selling real estate here in New York State. I know we're nationwide, but we're here locally in New York, and we're on WRCR, which is a New York station. Mm-hmm. And so what's going on in New York?
Well, let's see. Millennials are becoming a larger and larger part of the buyer market. I think that the typical seller is probably
we have a millennial in the studio.
I don't think he is even yet a millennial.
He is.
Millennials are buying, baby boomers are selling, and Gen X are writing the loans.
See, Scott disagrees with you.
Well, the knock, I believe Phil has the empirical data, but the knock on millennials is they are still in their mom's basement, and they are entitled in the backpack and hipster. I think that there are some stereotypes that aren't true, but you know what? The data is slowly eroding that myth.
Oh, so you might be wrong.
I'm not wrong, but I'm coming along. I mean, there's still quite a bit.
I'm going with the fact that you're wrong, and I'll tell you why I think you're wrong.
He still wants them to get off his lawn.
That's right.
For sure.
The National Association of Realtors 2015 report on generational trends found that millennials, which is really the ages that they were doing the study on, was between 25 and 34, make up the largest share of home buyers at 32%. So I do think you were wrong.
Okay, you know what? I'll go with that statistic, but I bet you that's not true demographically in the metro markets like Boston, Chicago, obviously New York, San Francisco, Houston, maybe Miami, because they don't earn enough to buy these outrageously priced properties in, let's say, somewhere in outside Vegas. If he's a cop and she's a nurse, they can buy a home.
You were just talking about a studio in New York City,
yeah,
on 82nd Street.
Right. Clients texted me they want some help and they want to rent it, and it's $3,175 a month for 460 square feet. So people in those southern states, in New Mexico, where there's land and land, that would not even believe that. They wouldn't want to live in their garage for over $3,000 a month. So I believe that there has been a lot of growth where the millennials, but they have to have a job for 2 years. And Phil, you'll agree, they definitely are not, I mean, they are not move-up buyers. They didn't sell with a bunch of equity.
Well,
they definitely
they're
didn't
not
do that.
Move-up buyers. They're millennials.
Exactly. So they...
First-time home buyers.
Yeah. In fact, not only are they first-time home buyers, but here's a shocking statistic for you. 68% of millennials, I'm sorry, 68% of first-time home buyers are millennials.
There you go.
I believe that in those markets where they can, but that's certainly not the metro areas.
Sure that is. That's the majority of our sales.
So that means they have to be earning on a $500,000 loan. What do they have to be earning?
They're making a lot of money. But, of course, we're in a high-wage area. So we have a caller, and we have a question from an esteemed colleague in Hopkinton, Massachusetts. Not just any colleague.
Not just any colleague.
So Kathleen Buckley, who's a kind of a big deal up in Hopkinton, Massachusetts, which, as we all know, is the start of the Boston Marathon.
Yeah, and it's also Red Sox County, right?
We're not going to hold that against her. She's asking, why is it important to hire a local expert, and what advantages accrue to the consumer? All right. So if you are a millennial, if you are a first-time home buyer, if you are just jumping into this, why do you need local expertise? All right, Scott just asked me, well, you know, how can millennials buy in this market if the median price is $500,000 or $600,000? They have to make a lot of money. All right, you know, you have to know your buyer. All right. From our point of view, from the professional's point of view, from the consumer's point of view, what should they look for in the person that's going to represent them? Local knowledge is crucial because you're going to be living here, you're going to be raising children here, presumably, or raising your family. Any other input from...
Yeah, I would definitely agree with you on the local knowledge, but you also want to hire a professional for the negotiation skill that they have.
Uh-huh.
Do you think that people, this is a loaded question, overall want representation or they really want facilitation?
I think they want representation.
I agree. I think they want representation.
You think they want
I think
win?
There was a time that they wanted facilitation, but today I think they want representation, especially millennials.
Okay. That's interesting. I mean, I think that millennials are the group that would certainly run to their Google app and not listen to what the seasoned professional would say. I think they think they
well,
can.
Here's an interesting thing. We know this about millennials. They can get all the information that they need on the internet. Okay, you are a fun guy. I see
no,
what you're
it's
doing.
Not only fun, I'm reading that he's handsome.
Oh, okay.
Hold on. But I want to see. What do you think now? Is that something I'm I see that's...
I'm not even in this.
I'm reading some texts.
It's okay. I don't need to be in it. I'm on all these other cameras. Okay,
okay
we,
so the
we
question
are going
came
to digress
up.
Here.
Okay, here's a good question. What's the difference between representation and facilitation?
Okay, wait a minute. I was still talking.
Okay, go ahead. It came up.
The speed of knowledge here.
Okay, I forgot the question.
Okay, you asked me about the millennials, and I said the millennials... What we do know about them is that they can get all the information that they need on the internet, but they do not want to have that negotiation face to face.
I believe you.
They
want to
have somebody
else
do that for them.
Either of you think that they're short on trust?
Yes, and that's why they want.
I think everyone is short on trust.
Okay, so let me
go to your question.
Let me hammer this out for you. Okay, first of all, to answer the question, the difference between representation and facilitation is if you have a someone representing you. All right. They are your fiduciary. They are really walking you through this and watching your back. A facilitator is more of a
passive
person.
Explain fiduciary for those who don't know.
A fiduciary is like your doctor, your lawyer, your accountant who is obligated to advocate for your best interests, keep things confidential, and just be like your mother. All right. Well, actually, my mother had a big mouth. So be like your mother, but not like my mother, because my mother was chatty. All right. Sorry, Mom. So a facilitator is somebody who'd kind of just like open the door. They would unlock the door.
Or purely transactional.
Yeah,
like
they would
Florida.
Be transactional. Right. They're not there to advocate. They're just there to, you know, kind of unlock the door, provide you the paperwork.
And just bring everything together.
Yeah, but kind of be like Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
No representation
Scott
on either side.
Scott makes a good point, and this is something that has been talked about since the advent of the internet, which is this. At some point... All this access to online data may make real estate be like Amazon.com, where we kind of have a point-and-click purchase experience where real estate agents are not necessary. But here would be my correction to that.
Okay.
Go ahead.
It's not like buying on Amazon. It's like buying online from IKEA. You still have to put it together. You're going to get all this stuff that you have to assemble. You don't even have an Allen wrench.
Yeah, and I hate that anyway.
Yeah, no, who likes putting that stuff together? You got to be twisted to like putting that stuff together.
And drive to Jersey.
Or even better, it's like buying the raw material from the lumber yard. It's not like buying from Amazon. It's like buying the stuff from the lumber yard. So having access to the data, it is the booby prize. Having the raw material is not enough to finish the transaction.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It is too complex. It is too expensive to do it
and you don't have the skill
alone.
All right. And that's the thing, is they're looking for the skill. They can find, and they don't even expect the realtor to go out and find the house.
And we're
they
gonna continue
are
this,
fine.
But the radio people here are telling
I know,
us
they're
people.
Telling us that we have callers on the line. I know. But we're trying to answer these questions.
I heard this time,
but
too.
If you would like to join in on the conversation, please give us a call at 845-362-0013. We do have some callers already waiting for us. Can we go to the first caller, please? Hello, you're on the air.
Hey, you guys talking to me?
We're talking to you. Are you talking to us?
I certainly am. It's Dave Weinstein. How you
hey,
guys doing?
How are you? We know you.
Sure.
That's my
How's
security
everybody?
Detail.
That's right. He could be security detail. What's on your mind today, David?
Well, I was going to take the bait that Phil offered at the opening about the state of interest rates and more generally the government sort of interaction with markets, because obviously the political environment is so top of mind. I wondered if you guys had a thought about what the two sort of presumptive nominees and their platforms meant for the real estate market. And the two things I was thinking about were, one, monetary policy, and two, the government-sponsored entities, Freddie and Fannie.
Wow.
Yeah.
Silence. Absolute silence.
We might have to go to the internet.
Glazed over look on our faces. Thank you for introducing erudite, intelligent questions to something where we were, you know, we weren't prepared to be erudite and intelligent and sophisticated.
We're always prepared. What are you talking about?
Do you have to be so classy, Dave?
I'm not even sure that they've actually, either person has actually specified what will happen to those quasi-governmental institutions.
No one's talking about them, right? No one talks about it.
Because that's not important. All the other stuff's important.
Well, I mean, what's important to you guys? Are Freddie and Fannie important to your markets as far as you're concerned?
They're absolutely crucial. As a matter of fact, the government, and what the caller's referring to is that when you borrow money, the government doesn't print the money up. The bank doesn't go down the street to borrow the money. They get the money from the government, from the federal mortgage agencies, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, for conventional mortgages. They are a huge, huge chunk of the mortgage market. So that money is loaned to the banks. They own the note, and the bank will get the money from there. The bank's not the bank is not giving you the money themselves necessarily. They're taking it from the government-sponsored entities. One of the reasons we had the huge financial crisis we had was because the government almost went broke because so many of those loans went south. One could say that the government-sponsored entities, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, are what makes the American housing market unique, because no other country that I know of has a 30-year fixed mortgage, because they don't have the financial structure mechanics, the infrastructure, to be able to give that trillions of dollars in mortgage money out to the public the way we can. So their preservation is absolutely crucial to the survival of the American housing market as we know it.
That was a great contribution. Thank you, David, for bringing this topic to our show today, and thank you for answering that and bringing that wealth of information. We have to go to break, though. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a call at 845-362-0013.
Whether you're looking to buy a new home or refinance, Annie Mac Home Mortgage offers competitive rates, a wider array of products, and best customer service available in the lending industry. They have renovation loans for the almost perfect home that just needs a little work. If you want to get a new home built, they have construction to permanent loans with competitive rates and quick closings. Annie Mac Home Mortgage has federally insured FHA loans for borrowers who have had credit problems in the past and no down payment. VA loans for current and former members of America's Armed Forces. Whatever loan product, our licensed mortgage originators will walk you through every step of the process and take the time to work with you individually. Talk to us. Annie Mac won't just get you a mortgage. They will get you the right mortgage for you. Call Annie Mac Home Mortgage at 1-888-242-1313. That's 1-888-242-1313. Annie Mac Home Mortgage is an equal housing lender. NMSL 338923. Annie Mac Home Mortgage is a licensed lender by the Colorado Mortgage Company Registration.
Call Annie Mac.
This is Paul Oster, the nation's credit repairman, and I want to help you improve your credit. As the CEO of Better Qualified, I've helped thousands of people over the past 10 years. I'm the credit expert for Fox Business News and all the major networks. I'm a certified FICO pro that uses the consumer laws to help delete negative information off of credit reports. We have a debt elimination program that focuses on the laws surrounding collections, judgments, and charge-offs. You could be entitled to up to $1,000 per violation. Call now for your free credit consultation. 888-533-8138. That number again, 888-533-8138. Or visit us on the web at betterqualified.com.
It's time for the revolution. The real estate solution. We saw the confusion.
the buyer in this.
Okay, we're back. And we're back at the Real Estate Revolution on New York's AM 1700 WRCR. If you'd like to call in and join the conversation, 845-362-0013. Scott, what were you saying?
Well, I want to take the position of the buyer, and this has always been a particularly vexing issue for me. Clients have asked, and I've bought homes. If, as Phil states, we know that realtors, amongst others, are fiduciaries, which means they keep their clients' best interests above their own, in what other instance are fiduciaries compensated on a sale, like a Chevy or a Sears Whirlpool stove? I mean, that always has struck me as a complete contradiction in terms. How is a fiduciary paid based on selling you more product?
Okay,
anybody reconcile that?
Right. So the question is this. Is there a conflict of interest if you entrust your business to someone who has a competing interest with your interests? How can they really advocate for you if they don't eat, if they don't sell you something?
Hmm.
Okay, that's the question. So an attorney...
And I also think that in addition to his question, he's also saying the higher you pay as a buyer, the more money they're going to make on the commission.
Right.
Is that really what your question is?
That's one thing. And on the other side, if you lose $10,000 as is representing a seller, you lose $150 and the seller's losing $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
So it's clearly inequitable. I know where Phil's going to go with the lawyer, so go ahead.
Well, I actually like what you're saying. Let me address also the higher sale price thing. So, yeah, how can I really represent your interests as a buyer agent if I make more money by not getting
right,
you
if
as
you
good
get
a price?
Me to pay more, you're going to make more money.
What I would say to that is the incremental difference in commission is so minute that if I get you to pay $2,000 or $5,000 more, we're really talking about dinner.
Right.
Or less. No, I understand, but I'm talking the overall spectrum. Yes, yeah, so Victoria's that one aspect, but the overall, the fact is, as we enter into an agency relationship, I have your best interest in mind, but I am getting paid pursuant to a sale. To me, that just as a overall smacks of a contradiction. Sales should not pay the executor of an estate or an attorney.
Well, it does happen in other industries, though. Financial services, it occurs. As a matter of fact, a fee-only financial advisor.
Mm-hmm.
Is a relatively new thing. A stockbroker was a fiduciary or is a fiduciary, but they only make money when they sell you stock. So fee-only stuff where they take a flat retainer, if you will, like an attorney.
Right, mm-hmm. And an attorney can do that too, and they work on a contingency
only
basis.
Only on certain matters. In fact, it's mm-hmm. unethical in all matters except for personal injury because they want to afford those victims access to the courts. But they can take it in a criminal case or
right. They can't take
business.
It through a divorce. They can't take it through so that. But they can take it on a contingency level with personal injury.
And only because someone's may be really, really hurt but don't have money for retaining counsel.
Mm-hmm.
So we have another caller?
Yeah, I have a...
Well, let Phil finish.
I want to hear. Go ahead.
Midstream there.
You
lost your train of thought, didn't you?
I was done.
How are they reconciled? Yeah, it's a tough one.
How do you reconcile it is, first of all, you have to have a presumption of good faith. You cannot assume, as the law does not assume, that just because you only get paid for selling something, that you're going to... You know, they also want to buy something, right? So it's not a complete contradiction of interests, but there are competing interests if it's not done right.
Phil, you know what? I think that it could be seen as a... This is my issue. You said this is like my what? Cat or pet? I like to pet. I love this issue
is
because
this your cat you like to
it's
pet.
Almost,
it's so he said.
Yeah, said
this is family radio, Scott.
he said that off air, but I think the answer is the reason why they get paid transactionally is simply because there's no other way. Because unless you find someone who wants to retain their services, and that is so infrequent, almost to be non-existent in the buyer side, that there's no other way.
Well, there are other ways, and we have to go back to the history of real estate where everyone worked for the seller at one time.
Right.
So when everyone represented the seller, everyone's job was to get paid if and only if the seller got the sale they were looking for. Buyer agency is...
Thankfully, that has evolved.
Yes. Buyer agency is different now, where the agent with the buyer represents the buyer's interests
in almost all cases today.
Yes, and that's a new thing to an old pay model.
That's correct. It's new to me. I started back, 25 years ago, where everyone represented the seller under sub-agency, and now we have buyer agency, which is the norm today.
Let's talk to our caller.
Yeah, it's Erica.
Erica, you with us?
Yep, I'm here.
Hi, Erica. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. What's on your mind?
Well, I've been dealing with a lot of the millennials as a buyer's agent, and I think that it's all about training them. And
like
many
training?
Of these...
Educating them.
Yeah. Educating the buyers. Educating millennials is what you're saying. So
house training.
She's house training the cat.
They don't understand how we work. They don't understand the buyer's agency. They don't understand the whole deal. But they do not necessarily expect us to be compensated by the seller. And they don't always understand how the whole process is. We're working with people right now who have asked us, how do you get paid and can I pay you? So
right.
I think that the millennial generation, we cannot put them in a box. And we cannot just say that this is what
so
they all expect.
Yeah, I just want to explain that to everyone who doesn't understand what she just said, because obviously there's millennials that aren't really understanding that. In most cases, the seller has already agreed to pay the buyer's agent's commission. That's where you're going with that. And a lot of the millennials, you're saying, are not aware of that, so they don't really have any idea how you're getting paid. Is that what you said?
Exactly.
Right. The intuitive thing would be that I'm working with an agent. I would pay this agent. They don't get that there's an older pay model, which I just talked about.
Right. And there are certain circumstances where the buyer will need to pay the agent.
So, Erica, let me ask you. They naturally think they should be paying, and they're pleasantly surprised to hear that the seller is compensating their agent?
Yes. For example, I just had a guy who is a mechanic, an auto mechanic, so he's used to being paid for his services.
Right.
And we put him up for closure. And he said to me, if we don't buy this property, we would be happy to compensate you for your time. I mean, that is not a concept that we are used to dealing with as real estate agents.
So you, too, were pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
But that's Pennsylvania. Nice.
That's where everyone's right. Nice.
So it's all about education. And it's about, I explained to him how we work, how we get compensated. And the bottom line is, just because someone is a millennial does not mean they understand how it used to work with their parents. So this is wide open for some of our real estate agents to explain. This is the process. But I don't think they really care about facilitation versus representation. They just want the house or they don't want the house.
I think the same thing. I think that people believe that that representation will rock the boat, screw up the deal. We're all playing nice. Why are you messing this up over a silly deck or a radon inspection or some...
So you don't think that they would feel that they're getting a higher level of service and if they're being represented?
No, I don't.
I don't either.
Hmm.
I think that people... They besides what Erica said, they just want the house. I hate to think that if you bought in the last up boom time, you bought it, and there's no problem.
That doesn't mean they don't want to be advised. That doesn't mean they don't want to be educated about the process. That doesn't mean that they want to do this alone.
Does that mean representation?
He's saying as a facilitator, he'll give that information anyway.
He'll
still
be
the local expert and still facilitate the deal.
But I think people think representation is specifically in the form of negotiating what you'd say to the other side.
Right. I see it that way.
I think Phil's right, though, that representation naturally covers all the value you give.
When someone truly understands what a buyer agent can do for them, then they... their eyes are opened. Let's take, for example, where there's a shared driveway or the agent finds something out about the property that the buyer would not have otherwise known. For example, there is a utility easement going through the backyard, or there is a shared driveway that has a maintenance agreement on it, or there is
underground storage tanks.
There's all kinds of things that they wouldn't have otherwise known about that had their agent not done the due diligence on the property. Okay.
Definitely.
Okay, but I think a facilitator also needs to bring those things to the buyer's attention.
Absolutely. It's
so basically what I'm hearing is that the facilitator is going to be the local expert, give this information anyway, and the level of negotiation skill is irrelevant. Is that correct?
Well, tough call. Erica, you could disagree, but I think if they walk in the door wanting facilitation, then find out after the agent runs the comparable sales that they could save $25,000, that, hey, your representation is not so bad. Wow, this person just saved me money. My first broker told me many moon ago that the guy that knows more is the expert.
But not only the best offer, if I have to get you the best deal, it may not be the cheapest. You know, I can explain to you that this is why you're paying this amount and why this is worth it, and you know what's going on in this area. Maybe they're building something, they're building a new school, they're doing other things, you know, in the area that's going to
correct
increase the value of that property.
Yeah, knowledge is power. So the more knowledge we impart to them, I think the more they appreciate their professional advice.
And my point is just that the millennials don't necessarily care about the difference between facilitation and buyer representation.
What if they, okay, and so if we explain to them that a facilitator cannot give advice and counsel, cannot give them certain information that they would otherwise have from a fiduciary that might save them money, do they still feel that way?
Save them money or grief?
Or grief, yeah.
Do you think that they would still feel that way?
I get that. I'm just saying, what we're experiencing in the field is that they sometimes think that they don't need that.
Oh, yeah. Well, they walk in the door thinking they know everything, right? They just need you to unlock the door.
Just unlock the door.
Well, yeah. I think that's part of what she was saying. Yeah. When you first called Erica, you said that you wanted to educate them. So basically, you're sitting down with them and really going through the whole process and walking them through what the expectations are and what the difference between representation and facilitation would be.
Yeah, it is a humbling experience. Off mic, Tim just wrote down, doesn't every first-time buyer feel that way? You know, they went out, they got pre-approved, perhaps. They are feeling confident.
Empowered.
Yeah, they feel confident. And they don't realize just how difficult the job actually is. And many times I've been at a closing and I've had people say to me, I could never do what you do for a living. I had no idea that it was this hard. I had no idea it was this complicated. Mm-hmm. I had no idea there were this many things to consider. Thank you.
Erica, let me ask you, when these people are enlightened, I guess millennials might be more enlightened if they're more well-versed and more educated on this, on the subject matter, do they hear you say that you're compensated by the seller and just leave it at that, or they ever figure out, Phil's smiling because I love this word, do they ever figure out that it's in the price? So although they're not quote-unquote paying it, the commission,
you knew he was going to go,
they're
here
funding it. I mean, maybe they're math majors. Are they ever figuring out that the money only comes from the buyer side of the table? They're, in fact, funding your compensation.
Yeah. Before you answer that, we have to go to a break.
All right, it's a nice
I'm
segment.
Watching the
cliffhanger.
Clock. Yeah, cliffhanger.
Pay the bills.
Wait 1 second. We will be back. If you would like to participate in this discussion, please give us a call at 845-362-0013, and we will be right back.
Whether you're looking to buy a new home or refinance, Annie Mac Home Mortgage offers competitive rates, a wider array of products, and best customer service available in the lending industry. They have renovation loans for the almost perfect home that just needs a little work. If you want to get a new home built, they have construction to permanent loans with competitive rates and quick closings. Annie Mac Home Mortgage has federally insured FHA loans for borrowers who have had credit problems in the past and no down payment. VA loans for current and former members of America's Armed Forces. Whatever loan product, our licensed mortgage originators will walk you through every step of the process
and take the time to work with you individually. Talk to us. Annie Mac won't just get you a mortgage. They will get you the right mortgage for you. Call Annie Mac Home Mortgage at 1-888-242-1313. That's 1-888-242-1313. Annie Mac Home Mortgage is an equal housing lender. NMSL 338923. Annie Mac Home Mortgage is a licensed lender by the Colorado Mortgage Company Registration.
Call Annie Mac.
This is Paul Oster, the nation's credit repairman, and I want to help you improve your credit. As the CEO of Better Qualified, I've helped thousands of people over the past 10 years. I'm the credit expert for Fox Business News and all the major networks. I'm a certified FICO pro that uses the consumer laws to help delete negative information off of credit reports. We have a debt elimination program that focuses on the laws surrounding collections, judgments, and charge-offs. You could be entitled to up to $1,000 per violation. Call now for your free credit consultation. 888-533-8138. That number again, 888-533-8138. Or visit us on the web at betterqualified.com.
It's time for the revolution. The real estate solution. We sort view that confusion. Come join the revolution.
And we're back. We're back to our cliffhanger. So, Erica, are you still with us?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, are you ready and prepared to answer that question?
Do you remember it?
Yeah. The millennials that we are working with, first of all, are more than happy to come into the office and have a discussion, which is kind of strange. What we're used to is having someone say, get the house and show me the house. And the millennials want to come into the office and have a consultation.
Well, that's really good because we had a whole discussion last week. Scott, do you remember that last week when Tom Grimes said, what did he say about the dentist? You don't meet your dentist in the back of a CVS parking lot?
With a flashlight.
With a flashlight. And we shouldn't be doing that either. We should always have everyone meet us at the offices.
I mean, ideally, I wouldn't want to meet the dentist.
Seems to be more than happy to do that.
With all the tools and the drills. Well, I asked you, do people figure out that they're paying for it? And that's the thing. Do they think I'm going to offer $300,000 for a property? And some part of that the seller is going to hand over to both brokers. I mean, do they know that?
Well, we talk to the buyers about it, and we're different. We charge our buyers, and we call it buyer's commission.
I know that.
We charge our buyers.
I get that, and I know that you do, and I celebrate that. I'm just saying.
I celebrate that too. Good for you.
If that wasn't done, would they deduce that fact?
Right.
Do they?
I mean, obviously, the buyer's commission is factored into the seller's net.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes.
It means they got that
much
less.
We're all in agreement.
So it is a factor there, but. I think the buyer needs to understand that, and the savvy buyer does know that. They're not getting us for free.
I think that they imagine that there's some obscure deal between brokers, and it doesn't at all come out of or even affect their price. They'll make offers without thinking that if it's a X percent commission, Y percent goes to the seller, and they have to pay all their bills. I think they like to ignore the issue.
Well, again, that should be addressed in the initial meeting. You know, the whole process, how it works. You know, how does everyone get paid?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, sure.
You want it. The initial buyer consultation, as Erica so eloquently explained, is part of educating the buyer about how the process works, what to expect, managing their expectations, and also explaining to them the difference between facilitation and representation.
So, Phil, along those lines, mm-hmm. if you are a fiduciary and you want to get them the best price, and some regions may say, I'll get you the best house for the lowest price.
Mm-hmm. They shouldn't say the lowest price. They should say the best price.
Some do, the best price. Mm-hmm. So that means that the more they offer, the more the buyer's broker would say, the more money you pay, the more money I earn.
Well, that's a mathematical truth.
It is.
Doesn't necessarily mean that they should pay more money. And as I said, the incremental difference in commission on a higher price in many cases.
Right, it comes out to the same
as dinner.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's like Will Rogers said, people aren't worried about the return on their money. They're worried about the return of their money. If
that wasn't
I
Roy
am
Rogers?
Out there, that was Will Rogers. Roy
yeah,
Rogers.
You said that last time,
no,
too.
No, you said that.
No, Will Rogers, I got it right this time. I will not make the same mistake twice.
Trigger. Roy Road Trigger.
Yes. But I think also with real estate agents, it's oftentimes not a function of, well, how much will I get paid, but will I get paid? That is the first question that has to have an answer in the affirmative. Mm-hmm. After that, if they know they're going to get paid, then they can exhale and start working on doing a good job for the advancement of the client. Because here's the other thing that every smart real estate agent has to understand. If you do a good job with a client, you're going to get paid for life. If you do a bad job with a client, you may get paid for one transaction, but you'll never get any referrals or repeat business from this person.
That's right. So basically, you're stepping over a dollar to pick up a penny.
Well, a relationship, mm-hmm. as
the
we said a couple of shows ago,
is always the best and strongest, yes.
That's the thing.
Yep. When you can build strong relationships based on trust and likability, you'll always be in business.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, me too.
And if I were going to buy a house in Schuylkill County, Pennsylvania, there's no one else I'd use but Ms. Ramis.
Correct. Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And we love people. You, Erica, and we're really glad that you called. Thank you for your contribution today.
Is that how you pronounce it, Schuylkill?
Schuylkill, yeah. County. I rode on the Schuylkill River back in...
but can you spell it?
No, you can only say it.
You shouldn't. It's like S-C-H.
I know where you heard that.
The password is Schuylkill. Yes.
Well, thank you again, Erica. We always love when you call us.
Okay,
so,
bye.
Scott... You have now brought your topic to the forefront here.
Oh, I have much more to go.
It's always what you want to talk about.
So, yeah, well, there's more. I mean,
what else do you have up your sleeve?
That's a hot subject. I think that there's more. I mean, if we accept that some part of the purchase price, mm-hmm. you'll love this where this goes. We don't probably have enough time. If you accept that some part of the price goes to pay commissions, then doesn't it necessarily follow that if you borrow 80% of the entire price, you're borrowing 80% prorated of that commission. So couldn't it further be said that if you isolate the commission, and let's say that amount turns out to be $4,000, 80% of that is $3,200, and you're paying that over 30 years. So you're paying a commission for 30 years.
That's a good point.
Because you're financing whatever percent, usually 80, 70, 90.
You're also financing, if you refinance the house and roll over your closing costs, you're paying for those things over 30 years. If you refinance, do a cash out refinance, and you buy a car, and ordinarily that would be a 3 or 4 year loan, right?
4 or 5.
You're going to pay your car back over the next 30 years. The cost of housing is what it is. And I don't think anybody would philosophically stay in their parents' basement because they object to the portion of their mortgage that went into compensating the professional assistance they got over 30 years. I just don't think it's really
more
about lifestyle.
There is an alternative. Why not pay the seller what they want, and why not pay the brokers?
Because most people are cash poor, and they're really trying to get the most for their money.
But it's also the same thing, Scott, because what you're saying is if you took cash out of your pocket and paid your broker separately, you're not counting the future value of money that you would have if you just invested that money in a separate vehicle, like, for example, real estate.
That's correct. Real estate builds wealth. So I would rather have more homes with a mortgage than have no home.
But in that example, you still have the house, and you still can realize the future value of the appreciation of that house. You just avoided paying more than the real estate commission by financing it. You can do both. You still get the house, and you don't want to pay,
you could do both, and it's a philosophical question that's only going to get asked more and more as the market changes.
Well, I was just going to say that it really depends on the market that you're in.
Okay, so can I ask one more?
You have less than a minute. Go.
Okay, well, then
go ahead.
Then let's not get an answer.
No, come on.
The upside is getting the house and realizing value. Then what percentage of real estate financing that went into the foreclosure landfill is attributable to real estate commissions? obviously, mathematically, some percent.
Look at the time. Wow, this has been a great show.
Yeah. So how do we reach you, Phil?
JPhilip.com, JPhilip.com.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
And Scott, how do we reach you?
sforcino@exitrealtygroup.com.
Thank you very much, and we love having you here as well. I am Victoria Rivadeneira. You are listening to The Real Estate Revolution on New York's AM 1700 WRCR. We are here every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we look forward to having you here again with us next week. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for being with us. Anything you want to add, guys, before we say goodbye?
Well, there is the Judy thing. We have the Millennial Real Estate Show on May 19th at Don Cokie in White Plains. You'll learn more about real estate purchased by millennials then.
Yes, and that's May 19th, Don Cokie, and it begins
White
at
Plains,
5 p.m.
whatever.
Yes, and we will be there live streaming from the radio show.
Smartphone to smart home. We are talking
about smartphone to smart home, and that is with the millennials.
Cool.
All right. Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah,
I'm sure Judy will love that from you.
She loves me already, but only imagine how much now.
All right. We have to go. Thank you very much, everyone, for being with us again this week.
Thanks for joining in the revolution. Now you have the real estate solution. Every Wednesday night at 6, it's the program you should pick. Join us for the revolution.
Thanks for joining the Real Estate Revolution with your host, Victoria Rivadeneira. We're live from New York every Wednesday evening from 6 to 7 p.m. for everything real estate, right here on WRCR AM 1700 on air and simulcast on the web at WRCR.com. And we're streaming live on Periscope, Facebook, Meerkat, and YouTube. So come back every week for the Real Estate Revolution.